Would you call the case, please?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The court will now call DBB Industries versus Cardone Industries. Thank you for Mr. David Kepler to argue for the appellate and Mr. Thomas Phillips to argue for the appellate.
Thank you. You may proceed.
May I have just a moment?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Davis, would you go in my office and bring me the handouts that were given to us just before we came in here? There are two handouts. I read them and left them in my office.
Here.
You got extras?
We got extras, yeah.
Very good. If it may please the court, the question in this case is whether a defendant may raise a special appearance to new claims in an amended petition when the new claims have little or no connection to Texas, number one. Number two, are severable from the original claims. And third, what little connection might exist will not be the focal point of the litigation going forward. The answer to this under Texas Supreme Court and United States Supreme Court precedent is yes. And Judge Wilkinson's ruling to the contrary basically undermines the theories of those cases. That's Bristol-Myers from the United States Supreme Court and Mokey Mac. And that is the basis of our appeal. The facts of this case are a little bit confusing in timelines and the like, so I'm going to go over them very briefly. From a reading of Cardone's brief, you would not understand this, but the real truth of the matter is Cardone, although a leader in the industry, began having problems with customers by its own emissions and from its own files. They indicated they had a customer service problem, a supply problem, and the like, and those customers started reaching out to Triple B and others. In the First Amendment petition, they claim that we had hired a man by the name of Farina at Triple B, which is true, and that he had downloaded Cardone information both before and after leaving Cardone, which was a part of his actual regular habits in downloading. They allege that that information was taken and used to get brake caliper information with two customers, O'Reilly and AutoZone. We did not ask for a special appearance to that original claim.
The Cardone's filing didn't specifically limit it only to brake calipers, did it? I mean, did it have some language that would make it a little broader, arguably?
It arguably had broader language, but if you look especially at paragraph 55, the first amended pleading, you will see that what they are talking about is primarily, if not exclusively, brake calipers. They've had in a look back trying to say it actually involved more. I'm not so sure that that would be a fair reading of the pleading. We did not specially accept, let me tell you, and I think that that issue forecloses us arguing much more on that.
And let me also ask you this, just because I'm curious. The Pennsylvania lawsuit, as I understand it, was supposed to have been tried in August.
It was not.
I thought perhaps it wouldn't have been. But how? I'm very unclear how the Pennsylvania allegations, I saw that BBB had some unclean hands defense in this lawsuit, that it dropped because of the Pennsylvania lawsuit. Can you enlighten
me
on that?
Sure. Let me explain, because this is a very interesting thing. Through this lawsuit and other information came to light, we became aware that Cardone had hacked into NAPA's website. NAPA is a customer based in Pennsylvania, and they had done that actually from their Denver office and gotten our confidential information. We filed suit.
Was this before or after NAPA gave BBB Cardone's information?
It was after. The suit was filed after. And that was in 2016. We filed suit in Pennsylvania where Cardone is based. Obviously, knowing about that back in Texas, and they claimed, their answer to that was, well, actually, Cardone gave Triple B our information, and we were just getting it back. So we knew that might be an issue, and we asked them whether it was involved in this lawsuit, and they told us no. Three ways, which are very important to this case. First, the corporate representative testified that there was no claim for any damages relating to the loss of the NAPA business, period, paragraph. Can't be any doubt about that. Second, damages expert limited did not talk about NAPA at all, and when he asked, he said he wasn't asked to, just dealt with O'Reilly and AutoZone. But most importantly, when the clean hands defense was raised by us. They said, oh, no, no, and I'm going to quote, it does not arise out of the same transaction or occurrence that is the subject matter of Cardone's claim against Triple B and Farina. We took them at their word. Unfortunately, it took their word back. And 3.5 years later, in an amended petition, they filed a new claim raising the Napa issues about a taking in 2010, another one in 2011, a third one in 2014.
But those early ones have been limitations barred? Did y'all raise the limitations in any
I have
form?
Not looked at the limitations issue, was not involved. It's not involved in this appeal. I'm afraid I just don't know the answer to that. But nonetheless, summing up, the differences between the first and second amended petitions are dramatic. You have different actors at different times regarding different products seeking different damages. And let me explain how different the damages are. As to the Farina's taking with O'Reilly and AutoZone, all they ask for is unjust enrichment. Think about it. That the whole look is going to be on the financials of Triple B in an unjust enrichment claim. On the other hand, in the Napa claim, they ask for lost profit damages. All the analysis is going to be on Cardone's lost profit and financial information.
Sorry to interrupt you again, but let's say that BBB had been successful in getting the Southwest region, which I take it everybody agrees includes almost all of Texas. Would you agree that had that effort been successful, that Cardone could show specific jurisdiction over your client?
No, we would not. Here's why. The issue is, remember, Napa is based in Atlanta, Georgia. The discussions with Napa regarding the Southwest region happened with our office in Atlanta as well, and to some extent with our office in Alabama. It did not happen in Texas. And in fact, with the exception of one thing that we'll discuss later, none of that happened in Texas. And this is unlike the Twister case, for example, in which the product and issues at Matter were in Texas.
What about the Western District? There's an allegation that some of the places in far west Texas, which is still a part of Texas, as I understand.
Yes, that's right. And let me tell you, let me give you a factual answer to that, then a legal one. Factual answer is this, and it's rather simple. What happened is we got the Western District, unbeknownst to us and pretty much everybody else, the Western District through New Mexico, Albuquerque, services 10 to 15 stores in far, far west Texas, up north, not El Paso and all that.
The BBB made attempts to get Texas business.
No doubt we made attempts in Georgia to get Texas business.
Okay. And had that been successful, what would have been the actual misappropriated trade secrets of Cardone that were allegedly at the heart of that effort?
What they say is it would have been the things that happened in 2011 and 2012 during the time they said we had agents working in Texas. We didn't. That is long before Farina joined us. He didn't join until September of 2018. Trey Smart, the other person they alleged, did not come to Texas before 2014. It couldn't have happened in Texas, and in fact, it didn't happen in Texas. And again, the difference between the cases they cite, like Twister, where the product comes into Texas and has the trade secret information in it to the ultimate consumer, is not involved in our case here at all.
But you're not saying that the misappropriation itself had to occur in Texas?
You could have, and I could conjure up a fact situation in which we could have a situation where it didn't, but in most instances, there has to be a connection. Remember Moki Mac, Texas Supreme Court case. In Moki Mac, the Supreme Court found that there was the long-arm statute was satisfied, number one. Number two, purposeful availment certainly occurred, but nonetheless, even though those efforts to solicit and the representations that were the basis of the plaintiff's claims happened in Texas, the focus of the lawsuit would not be on the foreign contacts. If you look at Exhibit Tab 1 in our handout, and let me explain what this is, and forgive me.
Yeah, I was curious about that.
It is from Marianne Ault's procedure class, first year federal procedure at Baylor. And what it is showing what the Moki Mac and Bristol Myers both hold. And that is, no matter if you do the contact, you have purposeful availment, the constitutional requirement is those have to match up in specific jurisdiction cases exactly with the facts that are going to be tried in the lawsuit. If the contacts are not the focal point of the lawsuit, specific jurisdiction is not appropriate. And there's no doubt that's what Moki Mac applies. The other side even admits that, and that's the issue we have. They've taken us on a little bit about, they say, well, everything's just one claim. This was all a theft and an ongoing theft, and you just did it in different ways. That's not quite true. And at trial court, we had sort of an interesting deal. They took the position that we couldn't raise the issue late to an amended pleading and told Judge Wilkinson specifically that. She asked three times for case law. That appears to be what she was focused on. Now, here, they don't make that claim. Now, they're very silent on whether they take that position or not, but what they say is severance makes no difference. Rule 120A disagrees. 120A says that you can raise a special appearance to a severable claim or an entire case. That's what we are saying here.
Okay, assuming that that's correct, since Judge Wilkinson didn't enter any findings or conclusions, what are we to do with the possibility that she concluded that the claims are not severable?
I think here's what I would say. I think the evidence is clear that they are, and of course, as you know, under the EBC computer case, the issue is, since we have a full record on this, it's judged on sufficiency grounds. There is no evidence to support that issue. Traditionally, and let me tell you, they don't raise the issue about the standard of review and abuse of discretion. There is one case, Mann, that candidly says it's totally an abuse of discretion and a severance issue, all parts. They don't cite Mann for that. I wanted to make sure you knew about it. But it is an interesting case, and I think it's important to the court's determination. There are two cases from this court, Trebesh versus Morris, Judge Holman's opinion from 2003, additionally the Benny Keith case, Judge McCoy's opinion from 2006, that take on similar kinds of cases and found that they were severable. Heavens. In Benny Keith, what Judge McCoy held, and in unanimous opinion of that panel, was that it was an abuse of discretion not to sever in those situations. Our case is much like that. There are two cases that go the other way. Interestingly, these are not cited for that proposition, but your research is going to find them. The most important one is a recent case from the Dallas court, Shin versus Chen, decided by in Dallas, I think Judge Lange, in 2000, earlier this year. No petition history yet. That case, there were a bunch of diamonds, and the question was whether everybody was claiming an intervention interest. Plaintiff and defendant were all claiming an interest in the diamonds. And so the court held that those claims were not severable because they were intertwined. Why? Because the adjudication of one party's claim would impact everybody else's interest. Is that the case here? No. It is not the case here because the truth of the matter is you could resolve the Napa claims on one hand and the O'Reilly and the AutoZone cases on the other without impacting either one.
Does anybody have a lawsuit going on against Napa? I'm just curious.
No. I asked that yesterday, and since they're a customer, I would guess that's the reason why.
I think.
Let me just say one thing in the few seconds I have before we turn it over to Mr. Phillips, a close friend, as you probably know, of mine. One of the issues they say is we didn't negate all the grounds of jurisdiction. We did. And I will take on, when I come back, their chart, which is the last one, and address those on a one-by-one basis. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please this honorable court. This case is about severance, and it is governed by Rule 120. Our thing about it being irrelevant was fact-based, one cause of action, just disregard that if it's confusing. It's confusing to me now. Rule 120 is in tab 1 of our handout. And the second sentence says, a special appearance may be made as to an entire proceeding or as to any severable claim involved therein. So the question is, what does it take to have a severable claim? And that's pretty well established in Texas law. It started, well, the Supreme Court first recognized it in Guarantee Federal Savings Bank versus Horseshoe Operating. That's in tab 2. And it says a claim is properly severable if the controversy involves more than one cause of action, and it'd be proper standing alone, and it's not so interwoven. But it's got to satisfy all three of those to be properly severable. And the first one is the controversy must involve more than one cause of action. So then the question is, what is a cause of action? And there's been a lot written on that, but it all points in the same way in our case. McDonald and Carlson say, in tab 3, essential to showing a cause of action, that is a claim cognizable in the courts of Texas, are allegations sufficient to invoke a rule of substantive law that, under the circumstances alleged, vests in the plaintiff a right and imposes upon the defendant a corresponding duty that it has allegedly breached. In other words, a cause of action is a theory of recovery. And then behind tab 4, I have two pages of definitions from Brian Garner. And the end result, when you piece all these together, and it's like reading a Texas statute in a way, is a cause of action is the same as a claim, and the claim is the same as a case theory. And we cannot find any Texas case or any federal case that has taken a theory of recovery. And here we have four of them, but they're all misappropriation of trade secrets.
But some of your causes of action are specifically directed to Mr. Farina, correct, in his conduct?
No, none of our causes of action are. Our causes of action are misappropriation of trade secrets. Now, when we filed this lawsuit, all we knew about was Mr. Farina. And so our pleadings start off with a lot of facts about Mr. Farina and what he did, and he was arrested for it and pled guilty and all, and how BBB initiated that and took advantage of it. In discovery in Pennsylvania, we discovered that wasn't all, that BBB had also misappropriated some of our trade secrets, we allege, through getting our confidential information from NAPA way back starting six, seven, 8 years ago.
Now, are you saying that misappropriation of the NAPA-related information occurred in Texas, or that BBB used that information in Texas?
There's some that was used in Texas, and we'll get to that, but I don't think any of that's necessary. In other words, it's one cause of action. It's one claim, and it's against BBB. It's not against NAPA. As Mr. Keltner pointed out, nobody wants to bite the hand that feeds them. We are suing BBB.
Well, so help me think this through, because what I'm sensing is that I think clearly BBB didn't fight jurisdiction over it when it came to Mr. Farina's misappropriations. But are you saying what is the quality of other evidence, or what's the threshold of other connections with bad actions on BBB's part in Texas that are going to treat every misappropriation as allowing for specific jurisdiction?
Well, here's what I started off, and you can see some of this in the brief that we all wrote. I mean, we started off thinking, well, maybe these claims are severed. Maybe this can be severed by the person you got the information from, and if so, is there jurisdiction? But I went to find a case anywhere that had ever taken a claim of wrong, a theory of wrong, and then split it up by where it happened or who you did it with. There just aren't any. And when you think about it, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, for instance, the Gazprom Moncrief case that this court is well familiar with. Moncrief said, Gazprom got our trade secrets. And they got some of them at a final meeting or two in Texas. But Moncrief also alleged that Gazprom got his trade secrets in numerous meetings in Moscow and Washington, D.C. And there was no attempt to split that out by jurisdiction and say, travel across the world and make these claims and then add them up, and at the end of the decade, maybe you'll be made whole. The allegation is this company, we're kind of the two leading companies in this line of business, remanufacture of auto parts and selling them. Then our allegation is this other company was trying to break into our markets and get an unfair advantage and become the dominant leader by stealing our trade secrets. And so who they were thieving from is quite secondary to the principal question, which is, what's our cause of action? And are there minimum contacts sufficient under the law to hold that case in Texas, even though some of the action took place in other states and the damages, when they're aggregated, I mean, these are two nationwide, indeed worldwide companies. So obviously in any complicated case, there are going to be losses that will be proved up beyond what happened in your one jurisdiction.
Would it matter to our analysis if Napa's Western District did not include a dozen West Texas stores?
No, because technically I think you could hold jurisdiction just on Farina. And you only get to this question of, well, let's look at the ties between what BBD did with Napa and see its effect on Texas. You only get to that once you get past this hurdle and become, with all due respect, the first case that I found, and I kind of spent the summer in front of the TV looking for one, that actually split a cause of action. But if you do that, then you have to look at the test. Let's now just assume I'm on my alternative argument. I generally like to get somebody else to argue an alternative argument, but Mr. Hogan's been busy in the Supreme Court. So our alternative argument is you have decided this can be severed, and that's the test under Rule 128. And then it can be being severed. You look at whether these ties exist. The test for that is in Moncrief Oil. And it says purposeful availment in Texas has three factors. One, you consider only the defendant's contacts with the forum. Two, the contacts must be purposeful rather than random, fortuitous, or attenuated. And three, the defendant must seek some benefit, advantage, or profit by availing itself of the jurisdiction. So when you look at those tests, I think a tie with Texas is that they tried. BBB tried very hard to get all the Napa stores in Texas, and it failed. Now, for damages, that may make some difference. I don't think it makes any difference for jurisdiction. I mean, yes, they got 10 to 15 stores in West Texas, and they claim it was an accident. It just fell into their lap. They were only trying to use confidential information to steal stores in New Mexico. But I think there's where the failure to ask for findings and conclusions does become important. I think we have to presume that what they did in that Western District was a purposeful and not a random act, and that it was seeking some benefit or advantage. Then I think the fact they tried to get everything else certainly would be relevant to jurisdiction. The fact that in Texas, while Mr. Farina was still employed with Cardone, one of their key executives, Mr. Smart, called Farina and asked him for information about how they did their fill rates, whatever that is.
And what did Mr. Smart's question to Mr. Farina have to do with the stolen power steering information?
Well, this was about Napa fill rates on power steering. It was a question asked August, the emails partially blacked out, unfortunately, August 28th, 2013.
And by that point in time, did Mr. Smart have the confidential information from Napa?
Yes, the The first round of information was obtained back in 2010-2011.
Okay, outside of Texas.
Early in that range. Mm-hmm. And it was not obtained in Texas. But the relationship continues on. What NAPA did, and I think it's probably intelligent, and we're all for free enterprise, they wanted at least two suppliers for every product line. And back 10 years ago, Cardone was the exclusive product supplier in power steering. So they wanted somebody else, and they asked BBB to get involved. BBB said, well, hey, help us out. Let us see how Cardone calculated the rate. And after declining a few times, they gave them that information. That's this early outside of Texas obtaining of confidential information.
And Phillips, at that point, what was was there any agreement on the part of NAPA with Cardone to maintain the secrecy of their pricing?
Yeah, we certainly allege there was.
And what kind of agreement was it? Was it a written agreement? Was it a agreement in terms of the way of doing business? How did NAPA have a duty not to tell BBB about Cardone's pricing matters?
Well, our allegations, as I understand it, was they had that was just an ongoing understanding between the parties. Now, this your question is getting into the. I love telling a judge they can't ask something, but it gets into the merits of the case. I mean, BBB says we're going to lose that case. I'm, making no comment on that.
I understand we're talking about jurisdiction.
Right, we're talking about jurisdiction.
I'm just curious that I didn't see in all of this very well prepared and thorough briefing any discussion of the conduct of NAPA in providing BBB this information that's supposed to be confidential pricing.
We allege this, that BBB should not have asked for it. They knew it was confidential. Everybody knew it was confidential. And it gave them a huge competitive edge and helped them get 10 to 15 stores in Texas. But there are more contacts.
Well, before you get to those, I want to make sure I understand. Are you saying that after BBB acquired that NAPA-related pricing information back in 2010, 2011, that every subsequent Texas contact, like the meeting in McAllen at the hotel, that everything is tainted by the initial misappropriation way back
we
when?
We say everything. Their attempt to gain all nine regions and their successful attempt, their success at obtaining half those regions was tainted by that. The meeting in Texas was something else again. It was about some rebates and essentially a new bid for price. BBB, now having two suppliers, kept kind of bidding them off against each other. And we allege that information that they got 2010-2011, whatever they got from Farina when they downloaded his whole computer, all that goes into helping them make this what would still be profitable for them but would be attractive to NAPA.
So there was some
to keep Texas.
So there was some Cardone trade secret information that BBB was using when it met with NAPA in McAllen about the rebates?
We say it was in their head. That will come out in the trial. I think we didn't make this clear enough to the court in our briefing, and I just want to say, before we get to any of this, and the very interesting map that Mr. Keltner is going to speak about, before you get to any of that, you have to look at our four claims and note that unlike all these other cases, Seifert, any of them, well, there's just one out of corpus in April that says you can never split a cause of action and your breach of contract can't be split. You can split some other part of your claim. But you have to look and say that we have four claims, and they're not trying to split those along the four claims and say three of them belong in Texas, one of them doesn't. They're taking these four claims, these four causes of action, and wanting you to split them down the middle based on where they say most of the facts, not all, but most of the facts took place. Senate makes some of them be tried in a different jurisdiction, and that's really an unprecedented request. at least in Texas and federal jurisprudence, and I haven't found a case in any other state. I just haven't looked for them.
Does Cardone have a cross-claim in the Pennsylvania case about this?
No. Our claim is here. And we filed a motion for summary judgment back when they filed theirs. We didn't know anything about their... We've not made any allegations about their taking information from Napa back then. So they went to Pennsylvania. We did not cross-claim there. Here's where we brought the suit. It's here where we can get both Farina and BBB and get jurisdiction over them. And it's here we want to stay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, very briefly, I want to address Judge Meyer's question first. Justice Meyer, Cardone did not obtain non-disclosure agreement, although it's usual practice to do so. Let me address
first. They had no non-disclosure agreement with Napa.
Yes, sir. There was none.
Thank you.
Now, the next thing I want to finish up with going over all the claims that they make and explain why there's no connection to Texas. Before I do, let me discuss the issue of claim. They try a very hyper-technical definition of claim by mixing together Brian Garner's fine work, of which, of course, we know Justice Cole was involved. But the issue is, what they're really saying is this phrase: a special appearance may be made as to an entire proceeding or as to any severable claim involved. The claim does not mean a pleaded cause of action. It could be just a claim that wasn't yet pled. Why in heaven's name would the rules be interpreted that way? They can't be. Now, let me address the individual ones, and I'm going to take their chart, and I'm going to take it chronologically. This is the chart with the state of Texas. First one, Triple B attempts to win Napa Southwest Region power steering business. True, we did try to get it. We were unsuccessful. It did not happen in Texas. There at that time was nobody involved in Texas. Terry Smart had not yet moved. That's undisputed. Farina was with Cardone, not with us. No allegation he gave us anything. Second, Triple B successfully negotiates for Napa and Western Region power steering business. True. Didn't happen in Texas. Again, we still had no one in Texas doing those kinds of things. That happened in Atlanta, Georgia, where both Napa and Triple B have offices. Then they say, of course, we got 15 stores. We did. No doubt about that. But think about the Supreme Court's language. Mokimak. Even though you purposely avail, even though you directed advertising into Texas, it's not going to be the focal part of the litigation. 15 stores, take it as its max, of 700 in one of five regions is not going to be the focal part of this trial, and those are constitutional issues. Three, 2013. Triple B recruits Farina, who shares confidential Cardone information on power steering. That's actually not what they said in the initial pleading. And other lines, both before and after changing to Triple B. Partially true, we did not, of course, do a special appearance to the First Amendment petition. There is no indication that anything on power steering is shared to, there's some downloads, but not shared with Triple B.
What was it that happened when Smart called Farina?
They discussed fill rates, and the only discussion in this record from in live testimony from Farina, those weren't confidential information, and even Cardone didn't think them to be, so they wouldn't support the cause of action. Four, Smart meets and includes some communications in other states, and they cite 1 CR 487. I think that's a miscite. It's really page 497. That is his affidavit. He wasn't in Texas. He was in Orlando, Florida. And then the last one, Smart and Knott finalize increased power steering rebates agreement with Napa executives. This is the Reynosa and other meeting. How can it be the focal point of the litigation? It's not even pled. It won't be. That has nothing to do with it, and it couldn't deal with Texas business because Triple B never got that business. It dealt with other regions. On that ground, we ask you to reverse this issue and find that there is not either remand or find that there is not a jurisdictional basis based on Moki Mack and Bristol Myers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your arguments. They've been very helpful to the court. Your case has been submitted, and you're now free to go about your business. Thank you.
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas.